You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk SWCDs shine a light on partnerships and programs that can serve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We are illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Valley. I'm your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner with Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. On this episode, we are talking with Travis Williams, President and CEO of the Willamette River Preservation Trust in the Northern Willamette River Basin. Today, we're talking about the work of this new preservation trust and what it means for landowners and recreationists in the Willamette Valley. I'm honored to have him join me today, so a big welcome to you, Travis.
Hey, thank you so much, Chelsea.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So, the Willamette River Preservation Trust may be a new organization officially formed in 2023, but you are not new to the world of restoration and conservation. Can you tell us how you got started in protecting and conserving natural lands?
Out of college, I actually moved to Washington, D.C. for a few years to kind of work in the conservation realm, or at least try to. And I ended up working for a couple of different organizations. One was American Rivers, and another one was Conservation International. Given that I had graduated from Portland State University with an international studies degree, and rivers have always resonated with me for some reason, at a very kind of personal and visceral level. And that more or less aimed me toward conservation work at American Rivers and at Conservation International before that. And I came back home in 2000 and learned of an open position at a small nonprofit called Willamette Riverkeeper. Was able to be the, I guess, the lucky one out of the bunch who got that position. And I worked as river keeper and executive director for 24 years there. And as part of that, I had an opportunity to work on a whole range of issues that affect river systems that are really ubiquitous throughout North America and beyond. You're looking at clean water, looking at restoration, cleanup of toxic sites, fish passage issues at dams, all of the sort of policy and legal realities that are around some of those issues. Later, I had an opportunity to purchase a couple of properties along the river, and that was sort of the beginning of my love of conservation in the land trust model. And while my prior organization and job were not land trusts, the acquisitions of property were made for the same type of reasons and with similar goals, but it sort of oriented me toward property acquisition, and I found out that I really loved it.
Can you explain what a land trust is and go into a little bit about the different types of land trusts operating in the Willamette Valley currently?
A land trust more or less does a, I think, two main things. One would be acquisition and fee title, as it's often termed, where a nonprofit with a land trust name acquires a property typically for its conservation value. Sometimes there are other values intermixed where you might have low impact recreation for people, such as hiking trails or birding trails or water trails. Depending on the property. But generally, it all boils back to trying to acquire and protect habitat. And in many cases, you steward it. And in some cases, you have significant restoration that can be done as well. And that organization is the owner of the property and manages it for whatever goals they have. So again, that could combine recreation. It may not in many cases. And you provide an endowment for these properties that enables an organization to steward them and manage them in perpetuity, which is a little different than some conservation models. But having that endowment, and the endowments can be of different sizes depending on the properties. It doesn't always have to be a tremendous amount of money, but the idea is you build that in so that when any of us are long gone from the scene, if you will, and the organization continues to thrive because you've built that financial stability into it. Other thing a land trust will do is a conservation easement, and that's where a private landowner will receive funds or donate an easement to a nonprofit organization like a land trust. And an easement basically dictates what can be done on a property in regard to conservation. Let's say you have a 100-acre property that has 50 acres of really interesting floodplain forest or oak woodlands, that type of thing. And within the deed, within the easement, you prescribe that you're not going to cut those trees down, that you're not going to take invasive actions that could be problematic, and that you're going to steward it for the long haul. And when the next owner comes along, that easement is recorded in the deed, and they have to abide by the same rules. So it's another way a private landowner, instead of selling their property to a land trust, a private landowner can conserve their lands and feel good that for generations to come, those trees and that forest will still be, it'll still exist. And in our land trust, we are not yet doing conservation easements, but we will in time.
Yeah, so that kind of leads me into my next question of, what is the mission and vision of the Willamette River Preservation Trust and what differentiates it from other land trusts? So I guess one of those things would be you're not quite doing conservation easements yet. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. We are our aim really in our first year is to acquire a couple properties in fee title and establish the endowments for those. Our work is really aimed at from the mid Willamette Valley, so a little bit south of Salem, northward toward the Portland suburbs. One thing I noticed in all the years I'd worked on the Willamette was there was not a land trust that was dedicated to the Clackamas River Basin, the Mallala River Basin, the three main tributaries that flow into the Pudding River itself, portions of, let's say, Rickreall, that area west of Salem, and then, of course, into the Yamhill River Basin. And there's a variety of reasons for that. I think there's just been plenty of work to go around. You've got some really good work done out of Corvallis with the Greenbelt Land Trust. South of them is the Mackenzie River Trust, and they extend, from the Cascades to the coast. You have the North Coast Land Conservancy, which does some great work and have done some tremendous acquisitions over the years. And then based in Vancouver, you have the Columbia Land Trust, which has done fantastic work at a really significant scale, stretching from Vancouver down to the Pacific and then up toward the Klickitat River and beyond Washington. When it comes to a land trust too, doing that work, I mean, there are definitely limitations. Like most nonprofits, we don't just have $1 million at our disposal to go grab from the account and go buy a piece of property. So it has to be careful. You have to be very thoughtful about it. You have to not only look at the criteria that we establish, which relates to wildlife habitat, ODF&W's conservation opportunity areas, corridors that connect those. As you know, there's been a lot of that that's been established and mapped, and that can kind of be a guide, and we have that built into our criteria. Similarly, though, there are other criteria that our land trust cares about. If we're looking at riverine or creekside habitat, that could be, really essential property to protect. And I think a good example of this is I went and looked at a property about a month and a half ago on a small tributary called Rock Creek that flows into the Pudding River. That little creek that is very modified in places where it crosses the valley and has been channelized in some cases. I went to this property and I was walking in the creek and the water was still cold. And I looked down and I saw a freshwater mussel shell. The thing that makes this fascinating is that so we have live mussels in this little creek right next to the road. and a decent amount of vegetative cover that was native right around the creek. Of course, the hillside above it had been logged about 15 years ago, and they didn't do the greatest job of replanting, which we sometimes see, of course. But it does give you hope. They're a net positive, really, for these rivers and creeks. And part of the story is that it takes a host fish to pass by and to have an embryo from a mussel attached to it, and then it rides around for a while on either the gills or the fin,
Oh
and then
my
it
gosh.
drops off. And if it's lucky, it goes down into the substrate and begins to filter feed and grow.
Wow. So it's really a symbiotic relationship with the fish, it sounds like.
And in
Oh my
turn,
goodness.
the mussels filter the water. And if you have a big enough mussel assemblage, and this has actually been measured in other parts of the United States, there's a net water quality benefit below large mussel beds, where if you measure water quality above and below, there's a difference. And so again, the fascinating thing to me was that you have this little creek with very modest flow, and that's traveling across the Willamette. So at some point, you've got host fish, which have typically been identified as spring chinook, spinner steelhead, maybe cutthroat trout. But that work has literally not been done in Oregon to figure out definitively which fish are the host fish. And I've told anyone who's a budding biologist or fisheries biologist that if you're looking at something, or if you're searching for something really interesting to study, freshwater mussels in the West are it.
Just a quick update. If you are just joining us, I'm here with Travis Williams, President and CEO of Willamette River Preservation Trust. And you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. Can you speak to some of the biggest conservation challenges? You already kind of mentioned, deforestation along riparian buffers and pollution and things like that. But for the Willamette River basin, subbasins and surrounding habitats, what are some of the kind of key challenges that we are seeing, and how does your trust prioritize what to focus on for conservation?
The challenges are pretty easy to spot. If you look at, let's say, Silver Creek as it travels out into the valley, eventually meeting with the Pudding River, just the loss of riparian habitat in some cases, floodplains that have been cut down or developed in some fashion, that can be. Even smaller towns can have an impact in that way. Not to mention the many, many culverted streams and impediments to passage you have for fish in many cases. You could even look at, Silver Creek Dam, that is a secondary water source for the city of Silverton, up into the hills there. That is an impediment to fish. Although recently, luckily, I did find some freshwater mussels above the dam, which was great. So somebody's getting through. They're not numerous, but they're there. So I think you look at those impacts. Certainly, if you're, looking to protect oak woodland habitat, we do have areas that have, used to have a lot of oaks and they don't anymore. So, when we are looking at properties to prioritize, as I was highlighting a little bit before, the nexus with water is important. If there is value added in protecting or restoring a property adjacent to water where we can provide a real benefit for fish and birds and any other native species living in that area, that's definitely a consideration. The habitat opportunity, conservation opportunity areas, and then the connectivity piece of that with the wildlife corridors that you can establish from one larger area to another, so that if you're thinking like a migratory bird or a fish, you have options and to be protected and to find cold water or find a space that's kind of out of the way for migration. And the same holds true, I think, for the main stem Willamette. There's some beautiful stretches from Salem northward and certainly south of Salem. And I think there's definitely some opportunities to acquire and protect habitat along the main stem for the long term. We just signed on a property and are under contract for a 270-acre wetland property that also has some oak woodland on it. And
Okay.
you know, for land trusts, it's a whole mix like any other entity. If you're trying to conserve something and find the resources to do it, that can be a combination of individual gifts from people, both that you know, whatever amount works for a person, or it could be a larger amount for some folks. You can find granting opportunities. You could even find business support in some cases. And granting could be, you know, foundations, it could be government, a whole variety of options there. And then the other thing I would say, and I don't think I've mentioned it yet, is, you know, there are great opportunities to donate property to a land trust. And that's a fairly common thing that you see. Now, land trusts would still have to raise some money for an endowment, again, so you could steward that property for the long term. But if someone has a fantastic 20-acre parcel that they're in love with and they want to protect it for the long term, you can donate that to a land trust, or you could even sell it at a discounted rate. So there's a whole bunch of options in that. And I would say with any of this stuff, if people have questions or they're interested in, you know, some land trusts look only at properties that are over a certain amount of acres. You know, at this point, I would talk to people about smaller properties that might have a really interesting wildflower, or just be along a really sweet portion of a creek that's in really nice shape. So you can have discussions with folks that could lead to something good, whether it ends up with a donation or a purchase or an easement, or sometimes you might even refer them to another entity that might make more sense. You can also acquire property or receive donated property that needs work, and then, like any of us who are working in this realm, go out and figure out your restoration plan, figure out where you could get the funding for it, whether it's from the state of Oregon or from another source.
So on the trust website, I noticed that it mentions this organization is dedicated to protecting waterways as well as upland habitats. And you mentioned before the importance of oak habitat.
We focus on river basins, really. So that could be a small creek. Again, far away from one of the larger tributaries. It could be an open meadow of camas somewhere in the valley that does not have a creek or a river going through it. So, you know, as you mentioned before, all these things are connected, and we all, you know, we hear this in conservation, but it's very true. Even though it is the Willamette River Preservation Trust, if you're going to preserve the Willamette, you have to preserve everything else. So it's really giving, I think we give lend equal credence to all of this habitat, whether it's high up above the valley floor or somewhere lower along the Pudding River, for example. I think it's maybe a little repetitive on our website, but I talk about all the tributary systems that we're seeking to work in, and I think all of them have just some amazing opportunities for conservation. And every small creek, small pond, wetland area, if somebody has something that they think is worthy of protection, or that we, if we discover something that is really interesting to us, you know, we'll work to pursue it, whether it's on a big river, a small creek, or not attached to a waterway at all.
Now that we understand how land trusts can help our ecosystems, how does the trust engage with local communities to promote the conservation easements and land acquisitions that you were talking about? And who are these resources available to?
For us, getting the word out that, hey, we exist, here's what we do. This might be new to a lot of folks, and feel free to get in touch. So we've done that via different media like this show. And then really connecting with the network of people and neighbors up and down this part of the valley has actually been really gratifying so far. Because you might meet somebody who doesn't have a direct connection to a project, but they might know somebody else who was talking to them about their piece of property. And you can make connections that way. So, you know, I think too, as you have a bit of success and you show that you know how to do this work and that you're passionate about it, That word can spread.
So, how do you see the role of organizations like the Trust in addressing broader environmental issues like climate change?
Yeah, I think land trusts have a really critical role to play there. And this is discussed within the land trust community and certainly has been for a long time. If we look at nothing else, if we look at climate resiliency and the ability of these habitats to help sustain species that are under greater pressure and greater heat, both the temperature of the water and the temperature of the air, and then having habitats that are healthy enough to provide abundant shade and cool water and tap into groundwater sources. How do land trusts continue to purchase land and protect it and to restore it in some cases to the betterment of those species, but then also providing a greater capacity to, cool water or provide refuge outdoors for people as well, and to do a bit more to reduce the amount of carbon that gets released into the atmosphere by having better, more vibrant habitats, whether you're in the lowest part of the Willamette Valley or again up into the mountains. And I think the data back it up. I mean, we're not just saying it, and all the meteorologists and others would tell us that, yeah, there's definitely a difference in the hotter days that we're seeing and the consecutive hot days. So, the more that we can, protect all these systems that have cool water or provide, the shade and the cool air for any range of species that we see in the valley. That's one thing I would remind people too, is that we have so many cool species in the Willamette Valley and in the mid-Willamette Valley, whether you're looking at rivers or upland areas. If you like to look at birds, boy, you can find dozens and dozens and dozens of really awesome species to look at. And then you think about how they have to travel and what they're dealing with, not only here, but as they move north or south. And that is, again, kind of another underlying reason to protect and restore these habitats for the long term. Definitely a role for private land there. That doesn't negate responsibilities that the state or the federal government have to do a good job on the lands that they steward. That's a whole other topic, obviously. But the role of private land ownership and the role of land trusts and related organizations, they can really do a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, what advice would you give to individuals or other organizations looking to get involved in conservation?
I think it might be a stereotype, but look at things that are close to home and think about that little creek that weaves through a suburb or your town and learn about it. And if you can get to it, go do that and put your feet in the water and look around.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, how does it smell? Is the water cold? What are you observing around it? Does vegetation come down to near the water's edge, as in many cases, as it should? Or are there things that appear that could be better? And usually you will find an organization that has a focus on that waterway or that piece of upland habitat. And they've been working on it, but they can often use your help, both as an engaged individual, as a donor, as a member. Someone else who could spread the word about things that are helpful. And, I think we all see things, even in 2024, that you kind of wish wouldn't be happening in regard to the natural world. And, there's a role for people to speak up, certainly, or to help educate their neighbors. And thinking about smaller parcels from a land trust perspective, whether you're looking at 5 acres or 20 acres or 200 acres, all of these different scales can have real meaning. And especially if you add them up and as you map them, where people are doing good work, or if they have a conservation easement in their yard, or if they have it certified as a certain type of habitat, great. All of that stuff is good for pollinators, for birds, and everything else.
Great. Well, any closing thoughts you would like to share with our listeners before we close out for the day? Maybe, if you have any upcoming events, fundraisers, or news you'd like to mention for the listeners.
Yeah, I think right now it's mostly news because we're practically brand new, but we have that property under contract. We are certainly willing to take contributions that go toward that. We have toward the end of the year to raise the money, which I think is a perfect timeline for it. And again, people's contributions at any level help for that sort of thing. And you could find information on that at wrtrust.org. It's WR, just like Willamette River Trust.org. We do have a webpage that'll give you some information about who we are and what we're up to. There's also a simple opportunity there to sign up for our occasional emails. We try not to inundate people with email, but when we have good stuff to tell you, we're more than happy to do that. And again, over time, as we acquire our first and second and properties beyond that, we'll definitely have opportunities for stewardship or educational walks. So yeah, wrtrust.org, and we can get in touch with folks, and they can feel free to email me at travis@wrtrust.org as well.
Well, Travis, it's been a pleasure to learn from you today. Thank you so much for sharing your time and knowledge with us. And I can't wait to see what the Willamette River Preservation Trust has in store for us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate being on the show.
I've been talking with Travis Williams, President and CEO of Willamette River Preservation Trust, about land preservation in the Northern Willamette Valley. And I'm your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner for the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for tuning in on this episode of Conservation Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed our conversation on land trusts. Every effort counts, and together we can make a difference in conserving our natural resources. If you would like more information on this topic, please visit our website at marionswcd.net and our Facebook page for follow-up information and resources on how you can contribute to local conservation efforts. Also, sharing this podcast with others is a great way to spread awareness and encourage positive action. If you're looking for ways to get out and enjoy nature, come see Chinook salmon spawning in the North Saniam River and learn about these fish's amazing journeys at Pack Saddle Park on September 28th. And to learn more about the birds of Marion County and other amazing conservation topics, join our free webinars every first Friday of the month at 12 p.m. On October 4th, our first Friday presenter is birding guide and author Harry Fuller, who will discuss the birds of Marion County and where to view different species. All this and more can be found on our website. And if you liked what you heard here on Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ to hear from the Oregon Agricultural Trust at 100.7 or 88.5 FM on every third Wednesday of the month during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening, and keep up the conservation conversation.